So please, the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 10 again. Read one verse today, and then we'll go. I want you to be familiar with this particular passage, because it is from this particular passage of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1, on down to about verse 15, that we really are taking this study from. It's from, Paul says that what happens in the book of Numbers is for our examples, that we wouldn't fall to the same things they fell to, that we can enter in and not die in the trying. And so one of the verses that I want to look at, we will end up kind of talking about today. We're not going to start with it, but we'll be talking about it. So 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10 and 11. Are you there? Okay. Neither murmur ye. Let's say that together. Neither murmur ye. One more time. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Is being destroyed in this particular verse directly linked to murmuring? Neither murmur ye. Verse 11. Now all these things happened unto them, for in samples or examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. They happened to them, but they're for us, upon whom the ends of the world have come. So all of these things that we're looking at in the book of Numbers are really for us. And they're written for us. And as we study them, we've got to apply them to our lives and bring them into present truth and look at them. On your notes today, you have pages 192 through 197. Now, we've already done three-fourths, maybe even two-thirds or so of page 192. And we're starting right there at Moses' father-in-law. That's where we're going to start at. But let me set the context of what all we've got here. I want you to remember that they're leaving the camp now. They've been at Sinai about how long? Very good. Excellent. 2 years. And they're, now they're leaving. And what they are done, who do you need? Michelle Jones. In the yellow right there. And what they're doing is they're leaving, and now, if you remember, the cloud has lifted up off. And we related that to a time sometimes in our lives, or even in our church, where sometimes the presence of God just isn't found. We can't find Him. No matter what we do or where we're at, He has lifted up off of us. And that is a good sign that it's time to move. And it's not a bad time, it's a good time. When the presence of God isn't here, sometimes we get disgruntled, we get unhappy. But actually what the Lord could be saying to us at that time is, hey, it's time to move from where you're at and go to where I want you to go. So we looked at that last week, and the cloud has lifted up off of them. It's obvious that it's time to move. It's a move of God. Everybody can see it. The cloud's lifted up, and now we need to do something else. How many knows this way it gets sometimes in church? Hey, this isn't working anymore. It's time to move. And it's obvious that everybody can understand and everybody can see that this isn't working and it's time to move. So the clouds lifted up off of it, and now they've lined up to march. Remember that Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun have lined up. And then behind them go Gershom with the fabrics and Merari with the pillars. You all know all that, don't you? And then go Reuben and Simeon and Gad. And then goes the Kohathites with the sanctuary. And you remember that one. They carry the holy objects. Who or what are the holy objects? What are you? Say, I'm a holy object. And we looked at all those scriptures last week about that you're holy, how holy you are, and that you're a holy object. And then following that comes Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. No. After that comes the rest of the camp. They were right before those. And you're the holy object. And now what's happening is Moses now begins to talk to his what the scriptures are calling here, his father-in-law. And the principle that I want you to see here is this really isn't Moses' father-in-law. Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, has died. And we know he's died because he hasn't been mentioned since a point back there. But Moses' father-in-law has died. And what has actually happened is that he has designated one of his sons to become his heir or take his place as a patriarch of that family. And as he takes this place of that patriarch of that family, then they begin to even look at the man as the father-in-law, as the head of the house, as the father-in-law of Moses. Let's look at Numbers chapter 10, verse 29. And Moses said unto Hobab, the son of Rugel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law. But that's not his name. That's not Moses' father. Moses' father-in-law's name is not Hobab. If you'll look at Exodus 3:1, now Moses kept the flocks of Jethro, his father-in-law. Now either the scriptures are confused or we've got a different person here. And what's happened is Jethro has passed away. And what's happened is he has passed the mantle of his family, of being the leader of his family, onto his son, Hobab. And now Hobab is taking over that position. Now the reason and the point that I'm wanting to get here is I'm wanting us to see how different our families are today. When something happens in our family, when there's a death in the family, rather than understanding that there's been a blessing that's been given. Remember Jacob and Esau, how they got in fighting over the birthright? Remember that? Remember how they did that? Well, that's what it was. Both of them wanted to be the leaders of the family. And what Isaac wanted to do was give it to Esau, and Jacob wanted it. So this is what they were talking about. And so here what we have is the way that it's supposed to be. There's supposed to be a blessing that is passed from a father to a son, and that son now becomes the leader of that family. And we just don't do it that way today. What we do is we get bickering and fighting about all the valuables that an individual has left, and we want to split it up evenly or something, and everybody get their part and go their separate ways when there's no unity in the family. Now what this does is divides us rather than keep us together. And one of the reasons that their families were so tight and so united is that the mantle continuously passed from one generation to the next generation, and the family stayed together as a group rather than dividing everything up in their parts and dividing off and splitting up. And so what I want us to see here is the principle of God that He really throws here at us in the Scriptures is that this particular individual became the leader of that family. Now what I have here in that page on page 192 is a quotation from two of the commentaries that I have. About in the middle of that paragraph, the Bible Knowledge Commentary, you see that? I want to start reading there. Bible Knowledge Commentary, page 226, says, "Perhaps the best solution is that Ruiel, Jethro, who it clearly says is Jethro in Exodus 2:18, had died. Scriptures never mention him after Exodus 18:27. About 2 years earlier than this reference to Hobab. Hobab, a brother of Zipporah, Moses' first wife, would then assume the patriarchal role in the family and would play the role of Moses' father-in-law from the standpoint of the prevailing custom." And then in Wycliffe Bible Commentary, page 126, it says this: "The term hutin, which is the Hebrew term that is used here for father-in-law, means any male relative by marriage. So that the words in Judges 4:11, which is another reference of this particular individual, might be translated Hobab, the brother-in-law." Now the point that I'm wanting us to see is their custom, the biblical custom, is not to divide everything up into portions and send them everybody off to their part. They would collectively maintain the inheritance. Everybody would get some, but they would collectively maintain the majority of the inheritance, and it would continue on in the line and prosper and expand even greater. There's so many times people get their inheritance and it's squandered. It just disappears. Not all the time, but some of the time. And but the biblical way of this is to pass it on. Is to pass it on. Now, we don't do that today, and that was just the point. I believe that I wish that in my family that I'll be able to, and it won't be very difficult, Lance being the only son, to let him carry on what my family has been able to accomplish, not only in the natural, but also in the spiritual. Now let's kick in. How many here's that? See, what you've been able to accustom to accumulate in the realm of the Spirit, you don't want to divide it up. You want to keep it together, pass it on to the next generation. Okay, let's move on. Come thou with us. This is what Moses was saying to his father-in-law. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good. For the Lord hath spoken good concerning Israel. And that's Numbers 10:29. In fact, let's read that, those old four or five verses there on Numbers 10:29 on page 193. And Moses said unto Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, we are journeying unto the place of which the Lord said, I will give it you. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good, for the Lord hath spoken good concerning Israel. Now let me bring this into the place that I really want to bring it from. How many of you have witnessed to people and you say, hey, come go to church with us. God has promised some good things at our church. And if you'll just come, you know, you're going to get good things if you come to our church. How many has ever done that? That's a lot of us. It's some of us. And this is the way I want to bring it. See, what Moses was saying is, listen, you can be blessed if you come with us. And this is the way that we should approach people, is it not? I mean, we don't want to tell people that be cursed if they come to our church, do we? If you come to our church, God's going to bless you because He has promised some good things concerning our church. Has God promised some good things concerning our church? Sure. And the one way that we can always approach people, and this is what I'm trying to draw from this particular thought, is a way to witness to people. When we get the prophecies and we look at what God has promised to this place, listen, if it's going to be a prosperous place, then you're going to be prosperous. This place can't be prosperous if you're not prosperous. Okay? And so we can do this to the same way. We can go to our relatives or our friends and we can say to them, hey, come go to church with us. God has promised some good things at our church. That's good, isn't it, Doug? And let's read on now. Verse 30. And he said unto him, I will not go. Now, is that a pretty common response when you ask somebody to come to church with you? I want to go. Why? I want to stay with my family. I'll stay home on Sunday. I like to stay home with my family on Sunday. Is this good? It's pretty good, huh? I will not go, but I will depart mine own land and be with my kindred. Verse 31. And he said, leave us not, I pray thee, for as much as thou knowest how we are to encamp in the wilderness, and thou mayest be to us instead of eyes. And it shall be, if thou go with us, yea, it shall be that the goodness of the Lord shall do unto us. The same will we do unto thee. There's two parts of this witness to Hobab. First of all, if you'll come, God's going to bless you. If you're going to come, if you'll come with us, if you'll be a part of our body, then God's going to bless you. And then when he says no, it was interesting to me the approach that Moses took. Moses approached him and he says, we need you. You can be eyes for us. And the ear can't say to the eye, I have no need of you. See, we need Hobab. And he says, I want you to go with us, Hobab. Come be a part of our body. If you'll come, God will bless you. And you can be like eyes for us. You know things that we don't know. Is that right? Are there people out there that needs to be a part of our body that knows things that we don't know? And if they'll come and be a part of our body, they can be a part of the body. They can be eyes for us. They can help us go places and do things that we haven't been able to go yet or do yet. They know where the pastures are. They know where the watering places are. They know where the green valleys are. They know things that we don't know. And so Moses, I was so interested when I saw that, is how Moses approached this thing. First of all, he says, come go to church with me. I don't want to go. I like to stay home on Sundays. I like to watch football games. I like to stay with my family. Yeah, but you need to come because you will be blessed if you'll come and go to church with us because God's promised some great things at the church at Lafayette. I don't want to go. Yeah, but we need you. We need you to come and be with us, Hobab, because you know things that we don't know. You can help us do things that we can't do yet. Isn't that good? You know what? Hobab went. Now, in this particular context, you can't read it, but as you read on in and you read into Judges and on into the book, you'll find that he really went with them. And then I got down here in the, "Thou knowest how we are to encamp in the wilderness, and thou mayest be to us instead of eyes." Let's read that paragraph. What did they need Hobab for? Now, understand my point that I'm trying to make here, that I'm leaving that upper section about, is that they wanted Hobab to take them, to lead them, to help them. Now, what did they need him for? Wasn't the cloud enough? I mean, isn't Jesus enough for us? Do we need anybody else? Well, isn't Jesus enough? Can he lead us? Can he take us where we need to go? Why do we need anybody? How about you and your life? You need anybody? Or is Jesus enough? How many needs somebody? How many knows we need each other? Couldn't God lead them to pastures and water? Why such a big issue about Hobab? I love this truth. Paul speaks of the church as a body. Hobab incorporated into the body to be an eye. Don't we have Jesus to lead us? Isn't he enough? That's not the point. We need one another to function better. Are you needed? How many of you believe that you're needed here? You are. Am I needed? I am. Yes, I am. Do we receive blessings from each other when we interact correctively? Sure we do. Remember, no one is going into the promised land alone. You remember that? Did anybody go in alone? Uh-uh. Not even the spies. Not even the last time he sent out spies, two went in. Last time when Joshua sent them out, there was at least two that went in. There was 12 spies. But we're going in together. We've got to understand that we need each other to get there. We need each other to cross. And when we get there, we need each other to fight. Success is dependent upon one another. God, though he can do all things, always has worked through people. He is the cloud, but he will always use the Hobabs. How many Hobabs are here? If you think you're necessary in the body of Christ, raise your hand. All right, you are. You really are. I want you to understand that. So they departed from the mount of the Lord, 3 days' journey. Let's read that. Numbers 10:33. And they departed from the mount of the Lord, 3 days' journey. And the NIV Bible says, so they set out from the mountain of the Lord and traveled for 3 days. Now, how long were they at Sinai? How long did they travel? What are they going to do the most? Camp or travel? But we want to travel. We want to go. We don't want to wait. See, we can't control the cloud. But you know the truth, though? Is when he gets ready to move, we better be there. Can you hear that? If you're not here and the cloud moves, what happens? We got a good meeting coming up with Pastor Buren and Dwayne Swilly coming up. And I pray that you'll be here. Because every day and every night, there's going to be something. The cloud's moving. And if you don't get it, you're going to get left out of something. And every time there's extra ministry, you need to be here. Because the cloud could be moving. And every time the body comes together, you need to be here. Why? Cloud could be moving. Now, it might not go anywhere. It might just be camping. But you don't know that. Just be there in case it does. Those are good truths. Those are good truths. And then, verse 33, says, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them in 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. Now, here it says that the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them. Well, I thought Hobab was going to lead them. And I thought the cloud was going to lead them. What's the deal here? Who's leading? Is Hobab leading, or is the cloud leading, or is the Ark leading, or is Moses leading them, or is the elders leading them? Who in the world is leading this bunch of people? Let's see if I can get this truth across to you. You see, they actually followed the cloud. And the ark went with the cloud. And then Hobab was there to give them advice. But they were really following the cloud. Now, I want to read that second paragraph together. I mean, you don't have to read out loud. Just read along with me. Some say people actually follow me and not the Lord. Have you ever heard that? Okay. Now, it may appear this way. But if Hobab is following the cloud, and the ark is following the cloud, and the people are following the cloud, then it only appears they're following Hobab. I actually cannot believe a person would only follow me very long if I stopped following the cloud. Hello? Okay, let's get the picture. Here's this huge cloud up here. Okay? And the huge cloud heads north on Main Street. All right, here goes Delbert behind the cloud, and all of a sudden, Delbert starts going south on Main Street. How many knows that Delbert is not following the cloud? Now, in the spirit realm, it is identically the same way. How many of you can tell when I've missed the spirit? Are you going to follow me very long if I keep missing the spirit? If you know the spirit is going one way and I'm going another, you're not going to follow long. And so I can't believe that somebody's going to follow me very long anyway if I'm not following the cloud. I don't care if my name is Delbert or Moses or Hobab or what my name is. You're not going to follow me long if I'm not following the cloud. And nobody's following me anyway. Because we're all following the cloud. Were they really following Moses? Or were they really following the cloud? Am I getting the point across? I think I am. If Hobab took a different direction from the cloud, the people would notice. How long do you think it would take you to notice if me or any of the elders began to take our own paths? It wouldn't take me long to notice. The cloud was over there, and what I'm following is over here. Paul said, "Follow him as he followed Christ." That's in 1 Corinthians 11:1, right there beside you. He says, "Be you followers of me, even as I also am following Christ." Now he's telling them to follow him, but who's he following? Is he following the cloud? Sure. But he says, follow me. But he's really following the cloud. So who are they really following? Paul, look at the cloud. Okay, we're getting it out. 2 Thessalonians 3:7 says, "For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we behave not ourselves disorderly among you." He says, you ought to follow me because I'm doing it right. Now, this is a good truth, because I really do hear that a lot. They don't really follow Jesus. They're following you, Delbert. Well, listen, they're not going to follow me long. If I'm not following Jesus, and if I'm not... It's okay if they follow me as long as I'm following Jesus. Is that okay? What we're getting to a problem is when I get off track. But I don't think it would take anybody very long to find out that I'm off track. I think God is big enough to tell you if I miss it. Okay? We follow somebody. We don't like to think about it that way because we are rebellious in nature and want to be free spirits. We all think we're free. We don't think we're following anybody, but we're all following somebody. Few actually follow me. If you want to know who you follow, look around. Who do you spend time with? Those are the ones who actually lead you. Hope and pray they're following the cloud and the ark and Moses and Hobab. Okay? Do you know who really leads your life or who influences your life or directs your life? It's the people that you're around because they're the ones that influence you. Parents call me. They say, "Can you do something with my kid?" It's these people he's hanging around. These kids that he's hanging around are messing up my kid. And I want to say, no, ma'am. Your kid has found somebody just like him. Hello. What about you? Think about it. The people that you're around are just like you. And that's why you're around them, because they're like you. But if you want to change, you got to get around some different people. Well, that's the truth anyway. The cloud of the Lord was upon them. Now, we've studied the cloud, and I'm not going to get into this. On page 175 through 179 of your notes, we did this big study of what the cloud was about. But how many knows the cloud does lead us? And the cloud does provide for us. And the cloud will speak to us. And He will dwell among us, and we can even get into the cloud. But the thing that the cloud really wants to do is come upon us and get into us. If we are the tabernacle of the Lord, His primary purpose is to come down upon you. In Acts chapter 8, it talks about they had received the Word, but they had not received the Holy Ghost. They had not received it. He had not yet come upon them. And what we've got to understand is that we can do all these things with the Spirit, but until the Spirit really gets into us, gets upon us, we're just fooling around with the Spirit. His desire is to fill us. Be ye filled with what? The Holy Ghost. Be not drunk with wine, but be ye filled with the Spirit. And that's His desire, is to come in and fill us. And all these other things are good. It's wonderful that God can provide for us. It's wonderful that the Lord can speak to us through prophecies. And it's wonderful that the Lord can speak to us in our prayer lifetime. And it's wonderful that we can get into in church sometimes and really get into the Spirit of things. You know, we can climb up into Him. But what He really wants to do is get into us. He says, prepare me a place to dwell. Okay? So when the ark set forward, that Moses said, and then... Well, let's read verse 35 over there. And it came to pass when the ark set forward that Moses said, rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee. Now, every morning, as they were on a three-day journey, every morning Moses would get up and he'd give this war cry, arise, O Lord! Let the enemies be scattered. And then as they came to camp every night, he would reverse this and he would say, let's read the verse. And when it rested, he said, return, O Lord, unto the many thousands of Israel. So there's the two things that we're seeing here that the Lord God programmed His people for. Him on page 195. He programmed them first that when He arose, that His enemies should be scattered. That He was a warrior. The Lord will march out like a warrior. Arise, O God, let your enemies be scattered. Is that the mentality of the church today? Does the church, the traditional church especially, does it have a mentality of Jesus Christ the warrior? Does it have a mentality that the church is an army? Well then, why, is that true? Well then, why would He want to rapture us out of here if we're going to scatter the enemies? Why do we have to develop this mentality that the enemies are bigger than us? What we've got to work back into ourselves is, arise, O Lord, let your enemies be scattered. Let us go forth as an army of the Lord. It's so backwards. The enemy has done such a number on the church, and he's trained us to look for some any-minute rapture that's going to take us out of the war, when all the time God is trying to prepare us to war. And then the second part that you see here is, yes, he's a warrior, and he's out there, but he also wants to dwell in his people. Every morning the war cry, every night, come back, O Lord, into your people. And He's the same way today. That's the two basic aspects of the Lord. He wants to dwell in us and with us and love us and care for us and protect us. But at the same time, He wants us to war and come against His enemies. Did He use the church in the wilderness to destroy His enemies? Did He rapture the church in the wilderness? And we read in 1 Corinthians 10, He says, these things are written for your examples. I can't find anywhere where He raptured them. But somehow in our thinking, we think that's what God's going to do. And he's trying to prepare us to war. Okay. Numbers chapter 11. 195 pages to get to chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11 through verse 14 is an escalating time or an escalation of complaining and murmuring. And finally, in chapter 14, this murmuring has escalated to the point that it literally stops them from going into the promised land. If there is any one thing that you can put your finger on that stopped them from going in, it's the murmuring and it's the complaining. Because there's only one remedy for murmuring and complaining. Listen to me now. Listen to me real good. Because this is what the Lord really wants to speak to us tonight. Could Moses do anything about the murmuring and complaining? Could he? Could the elders do anything about the murmuring and complaining? Now listen to this one. See, a sad truth in this, and I'll ask it in a question form. Could God do anything about the murmuring? And could God stop it? Could God stop the people from murmuring and complaining? Huh? He did? How did he do it? See, there's only one remedy for murmuring and complaining. Now let's run through it again. Could Moses stop the murmuring and complaining? Could the elders stop the murmuring and complaining? They go get some new elders and they couldn't stop it either. Could God, no matter what he did, stop the murmuring and complaining? Now, this would seem like it would depress me, wouldn't it? I mean, I can't stop the murmuring. You can't stop the murmuring. The elders can't stop the murmuring. God himself can't stop the church from murmuring. And you would think that would depress me, but no, it kind of gives me some... What's the word I want? Well, I hope, because I... But it gives me... It lets me know that it's not me. And it lets me know it's not the elders and it's not what we're doing. You see, God's people murmur. And if you're a murmurer, you're going to murmur. Unless he delivers you from murmuring, you're going to murmur till you die. And it's not my fault. Well, okay. Let's read this now. I'm going to read all the rest of this page on page 195. Remember, the people are now moving. However, beginning here and continuing into chapter 14 shows the development of a spirit of discontentment among the people. A sad truth is that nothing Moses could do, nothing the elders, even new elders could do, and even a more potent truth, nothing the Lord God could do, stopped the murmuring. There is only one thing that will stop it. Complaining became a characteristic of God's people in the wilderness. Is this true or not? Though they did and experienced some great exploits for and with God, they constantly murmured. They experienced the exodus from Egypt. They built the tabernacle and all the furniture of redemption. They experienced some of the mightiest miracles by God in the Scriptures. Now, what should we learn from this? We're going to learn that people don't need a reason to murmur. In fact, let me stop right there and just show you. We're going to come back and read the rest of this, but look over there at Numbers 11 and 1. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Now, what were they complaining about? My point is, they're not complaining about it. They're just complaining. There's nothing here they're complaining about. We don't need a reason to complain. We'll find one. What should we learn from this? People do not need a reason to murmur. As great a leader as Moses was, the people murmured. Walking in daily miracles will not stop people from complaining. Do you know that we could do miracles every day here and people would still complain? They would complain that they didn't get the miracle. Did they get manna from heaven and quail and water from a rock every day? Walking in daily miracles will not stop people from complaining. Building a structure that the Lord God Himself will dwell in will not stop the people from murmuring. Did God Himself dwell in the tabernacle? I mean, was His presence manifested in their midst? Did they murmur? See, having a church that God literally dwells in, that the presence of God is so strong there that you can see it, won't stop the people from murmuring. His visible presence in the midst of the church will not stop the accusations. A moving church going after God will not stop complaining. They're moving now and they're still murmuring. People are going to complain, murmur, and become discontent. Perhaps the truth should discourage me, but instead it encourages me. I see that it's not me, and it's not you, or it's not what we're doing. The nature of the flesh is to murmur. Hello. The people of God who murmur will not only murmur once or twice. if people would just murmur once or twice, that'd be okay, but they didn't murmur just once or twice. Murmurers will murmur until they die, unless God delivers them. Let's go ahead and make sure we make the point. What is the only remedy for murmuring? And who normally brought that about? Oh my goodness. You're starting to know the same one that I know. In the wilderness, murmuring is a continuing characteristic. Murmuring people do not enter the promise. Is all this true? Now, we're not shouting tonight. We were shouting last week when we heard that we were holy. But when we hear we're murmurers, and if we don't stop murmuring, God's going to get us. We don't like that, and we're not going to get all excited about that. The thing I want us to see is that we better check our murmuring. And if we are murmurers, we better ask God to help us and deliver us. If He doesn't like it. Let me see. Before I go on, I just want to make sure, see if I've got that. Yes, I do. Okay, back on page 192. At the top of the page there, that's 1 Corinthians chapter. That's 1 Corinthians. And I want you to look at verse 10 there. It's on the left side in the big column. This is the one we read to start tonight with. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Does Paul tell us here that murmuring will destroy us? See, the only remedy for murmuring is death. That's why they stayed out in that wilderness. He wasn't going to take a murmuring bunch of people into His promise. They wouldn't go in. They can't go in. And they died in the wilderness because of this murmuring. We will notice the murmuring. I'm back on page 195. We will notice the murmuring began, continued, and grew. Nothing Moses and not even God could do to stop it. It grew to where it destroyed their faith. At the point of entering the promise, it was the effects of the murmuring that stopped them from entering. Notice in 11:1, there was not even a reason to murmur. They simply complained. Ouch. Ouch. My goodness. Page 196. Let's read verse 11 and 1. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. I want you to see that first of all. What is the first thing complaining does? It displeases the Lord. And now does the Lord hear it? And the Lord heard it. You know, I hate scriptures like this. Because I, like you, will get around some folks sometimes and I'll start murmuring and I'll start complaining and I'll start talking about people. And I'll say in my heart, God, I hope you didn't hear that. God, I hope you didn't hear me say that. Now, I know I'm the only one here that's ever done this, but that happens to me once. And I said, God, I hope you didn't hear me say that. Did God hear it? What do you think about it? Whew. Let's see if we can get this tonight. Let's see if God will do something in our hearts today. And his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Now, that uttermost is the outermost parts. I'm going to point that out, because when you start murmuring, you have a tendency to drift away from the center. Hello? It's frightening. You'll find that the murmurers will drift away, and the fire consumes them out there. And you can look in other translations to make sure I'm telling you the truth, but that's what it means. It means the outermost. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Now, somehow, you know, I really do want to get this truth across to us tonight. The Bible says that he wasn't just a little ticked off. He was hot. His anger was kindled. That means he was on fire hot. He wasn't just red hot, he was white hot. He was hot, hot. Why? What got him to this place? What got him ticked off? They're complaining. Jesus, help us now. Help us right now. Lord, as we move through this, I ask you, Lord, that you will speak to all of us in this room. You'll speak to our spirits, Lord. And you'll show us that a lot of the crying we do is because we've murmured. A lot of the fire that we experience in life is because we've murmured. Lord, help us. Help us, Lord. Because we haven't properly discerned the body of Christ, some of us are weak and sick and dying. Help us, Lord. And a hush fell across the house. The Lord heard it. I've already kind of talked about that. Our murmuring reaches the heavenlies. I know we think that we're only talking to this person or these two or three, or our wife or our husband, but it's bigger than that. The murmuring reaches the heavenlies. And the fire of the Lord burned among them, and the people cried unto Moses. How much of our crying, our weeping, our bad times in life, how much of the burning that happens in our lives, the bad things that happen, is a result of murmuring? And consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. The whole camp didn't suffer this time, but it will. Eventually, it will so deflate the faith of those people. This murmuring will so deflate the faith of these people that they will see themselves as grasshoppers. They can't enter into what God's promises for them because of this murmuring and what effects it's had on the people. And that's exactly what it does to you, and that's exactly what it does to me. When you get around murmuring, it deflates you. It brings you down. You can't go on in God because all of a sudden you feel like a grasshopper. I can't do anything. Goodness gracious, look at this mess. Pastor's got this thing so screwed up, can't nobody do nothing. Huh? it consume them that were in the uttermost parts? Not all of them. Got those that were in the outer parts. And again, I've already mentioned it. Murmurers drift out. Be careful out there. The fire of God comes out there first. When Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And this is the up part. Can we quench God's anger if we'll pray? And I wonder, you know, that's what Moses did. They cried to Moses, and he prayed, and God's anger was turned, and it quenched the fire because Moses prayed. You and I can stop God's anger by prayer. We can stop the fire. We can stop what's happening if we'll pray. Prayer is something that we've not yet grasped in the church body today. Few of us have a real prayer life. Few of us have a dedicated life of prayer that we are consistently manifesting to God. And we wonder why we can't turn His anger. We wonder why things go wild in our lives. Prayer changes His anger. And I want to ask you a question. You see, put yourself as the leader. You're Moses, okay? Now these people are murmuring. And Moses always prayed for the murmurers, but you be Moses for a minute. And if you were the leader, and the people were murmuring, and they were murmuring probably about you, and you looked out there and you saw them being burned up by God, it's being consumed by a fire that He sent, and they come to your office and they knock on the door, "Pastor Moses, will you pray for me?" Now you're a Pastor Moses. What do you do? Burn them up, God. I knew it. I knew you was going to do it. Show them I'm the man of God, and they better not mess with me. Get them, God. And you know, they'll even tell you. You know, I bet Pastor Moses thinks this is happening because I'm not tithing. You don't have to tell people that why they're burning. They know why they're burning. He's a good father. He's not going to discipline us unless He tells us why. We know why we're burning. We know why things are going crazy in our lives. We know it. Now you're Pastor Moses. Pastor Moses, pray for me. What do you do? I'll tell you what you do. You pray for them. God heal them. God forgive them. God save them. God move in their life. Put their marriages back together. Fix their finances. Heal them, Lord God. Do what they ask. Lord, they need you. And you know what He'll usually do? He'll usually heal them. He'll usually save them. He'll usually fix it. The fire usually stops. Hello? Pastor Moses. And what's so funny? What's so funny is He will stop it. I'm on page 197 now. And He will bless them. And you know what they'll do? They'll go murmur again. Because nothing Moses can do, nothing the elders can do, nothing God can do can stop the murmurers. Just go and do it again. And the children of Israel also wept again. Is this real or not? Is this like last Sunday's church service? I mean, is this real? Verse 4. Let's look at this. Let's read it. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, And the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Now this time they're murmuring about what the preacher's preaching. What he's giving them to feed on. Who's going to give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely. The cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. That's a wild diet, isn't it? But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. Before the fire stopped smoking, before they finished the last funeral, they started murmuring again. And what that really tells me is that we really don't believe that complaining and murmuring is critical and will bring the judgment of God. We really don't believe that, people. Because if we did, we would never let a murmuring thing come out of our mouths. We wouldn't even stand close to one that did because we would be afraid the fire of God was about to hit. We do not believe that this is critical. We don't believe that God will really judge today like he did then. But I have read you over and over again in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 where these things that happened to them for our examples. And I'm wanting to tell you today, if you murmur, you're not going in. If I murmur, let me put it in all context. I have a tendency to do that. I don't really mean it that way. If we murmur, we're not going in. We're going to die in the wilderness. And we're going to experience the fire of God, not in a good way. My goodness. And it was the next verse, they did it again. And what they're saying here is we remember the good old days. We remember, how good it was, the fish and the onions and the cucumbers and the leeks. Boy, we remember that good stuff. How free it was. They're a joke. They were slaves. They were under the whips of the taskmasters, dragging big old blocks and making pyramids. What do you mean? What do you mean, remember the good old days? Remember how it used to be, Doug? Well, let's go back there. High flower, oh glory. Come on, folks. We do this. Boy, I wish it was like it used to be. I don't want it to be like it used to be. Too many of God's people are like this. They want to believe, but they also want the things that they want, the things of Egypt. My goodness. The mixed multitude it talks about. The mixed multitude, and we're done with this one, this particular principle. The mixed multitude that was among them. Let's read this. I'll tell you what, let's read verse 4 first, and then we'll read the two paragraphs. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Now, let's read those two paragraphs. NASV Bible says the rabble who were among them had greedy desires. God's people are sometimes rabbles. Are these God's people? We're not talking about the lost here. We're talking about the people in the wilderness, following the cloud, following the Spirit, eating of the manna, baptized in Moses, baptized, eating of the food of communion. We're talking about God's people. And he says they're a mixed multitude. How many knows we got a mixed multitude sometimes? See, God's people are mixed multitudes. And I looked up this word to find out what this word rabble means. And it means a large, disorderly crowd of people, usually bent on riotous and destructive action. That's God's people. There's an insurrection going on here. Notice that complaining about nothing escalates to rabbles. There's a group now with destructive motives. And they affected the people of God to complain about the manna. They wanted some flesh to eat. The false among the true brought their infection. And as we will soon see, brought judgment upon the true. Now listen, the rabble's in the midst affected the whole congregation. We talked a while back about leprosy and how it was spread. And when you get around it, folks, I've been there. And I'm not talking that this is just you. This is me. This is any of us that we get around complaining and murmuring people. It has a tremendous effect on us. And I don't know how to stop it. I wished I did. I don't think there's anything I can do or you can do or even God can do. I'm just telling you what I see in the Scriptures. And we better learn how to handle it. Can you hear me? Am I too hard tonight? Am I just trying to be emphatic? I want to hear this. And I may be the world's worst. I don't know. But I don't want, you know, it's difficult to, when people ask you questions, not to feel like you're talking about somebody. You know, why did so-and-so do this? Or why did so-and-so leave? Or why did this happen to so-and-so? You know, what? And it's very difficult. It's something I deal with nearly every day of my life. And we're going to get next week into it. And they're complaining about the manna. And it's amazing to me how to some people, what I preach can be wafers of honey. And to some people, it's just old dry oil. It's the same message. But it's, I don't know, you know, this is really the way it is. Some people, I'm so anointed and so good. And to some people, my God, I wish they'd do something I like. I mean, you know, it's really, and you know, as we go on into this thing, it's going to get bigger because this is escalating over the next. I don't know how long it's going to take us, but over the next three chapters, 11, 12, 13, well, four chapters, 11, 12, 13, and 14, the rest of 11 all through 14, we're going to be looking at this, and it's escalating and it's getting bigger. And I really hope God speaks to us through it, and somehow that we can be a generation that overcomes this thing. And when I saw that nobody could do anything about it, even God's judgment doesn't change people, it frightens me. It really frightens me. And we're going to get on in here and we're going to look at some really, really neat principles that the Lord's just been showing me all the week about this. The anger of the Lord's going to be kindled again. Moses was displeased. And that's the point I was about to make a while ago. We'll talk about this next time. But see, the people were complaining against Moses. You know who Moses was complaining about? The people. And he told God, you know, you can read it, you can see it. He says, God, what do you think I am? You think I'm some breastfeeding father carrying him around in my arms to the promised land? He was so ticked off about this. He was so complacent. He says, just kill me. Just kill me. What have I done to tick you off? Have I done something? Why have you afflicted me with these people? Why did you send that one here, God? My goodness, well, I didn't have enough problems without him. This is what a man says. I know preachers never say that. He quit. He says, I'm done. Kill me. If you really love me, Lord, if you really love me like you said you love me, and if I'm your friend, just kill me. He says that. You can read it. So it wasn't just the people, it's also the pastor complaining. Everybody's complaining, and nobody went in. Not even Pastor Moses. Oh, how many want to learn something here? And so as I close, I'm going to ask us these questions and just want you to meditate about them, okay? Does murmuring affect me? Ask yourself that. Not does it affect me, but does it affect me, you? I mean, just ask yourself. Does murmuring affect me? Could it really bring God's anger upon me? Could murmuring really, can it really do that? Or is that just something the Bible just kind of hints around at? See, I really don't know if we believe this. I want to believe it. I really do. And you know how you know what you believe? You do it. You do it. And if I really believe that murmuring is bad and will bring God's anger upon me, I'm not going to do it. If I really believe it. Okay. Are some of the things I weep about related to murmuring? Could they be? Could some of the things that you cry about, that you get all upset about, could they somehow be related back to murmuring? Are the people I am around murmurers or supporters? There's two people. There's the murmurers and there's the supporters. The people that I'm around. Because that's what I'm going to be. Does God hear my murmuring? Does He? We can't whisper low enough. And what does He think about it? My goodness. I really want this to minister to us. We've got 11, 12, 13, and 14. We've got four chapters of God to minister this to us. And I really want you to be in prayer about it. I really want you to see it because as I've studied this, I went into this study wanting God to show us why they didn't go in. And I really think He's starting to open it up now, Doug. So many of these things we have done, but I'm thinking here's one that we're guilty of. And we've got to learn what to do about it and how to stop it. Okay? And I think one of the ways is we've got to somehow, when somebody comes to us with a complaint or a murmuring, we've got to minister to them. But at the same time, we've got to let them know, hey, don't be murmuring. And somehow it's got to be real to us. Okay? And I want God to minister this to us. Because this is the thing that escalated up to chapter 14 where they don't go in. Okay. Let's stand. Sure. Michelle wants to ask a question. That's good. That's good. That's real good. You see, because I'm far from that. You see, this is the only thing that I'm really a hook to or attached with. And so, of course, this is what I do. And so, but you're in the school, and others of you are in other places. And of course, you know. But I suppose that murmuring is murmuring. I don't know. I think there is a. I don't think there's a positive and a negative murmuring. But I think there's maybe a constructiveness that can come forth, or is it a complaining? You know, are we just complaining? Because God has you there. You see what I'm saying? And in your murmuring, in an extent, it's the same thing as they were doing. Let's go back to like it used to be. Let's take the school system back to like it was in the 60s and the 50s and the 40s. Let's take the school system back there. Well, what I'm saying is that He's really not God, and He hasn't brought it to where it's at. And I don't understand what I just said, okay? I just know He's God, and He raises up, and He brings down. And when He's ready to destroy the thing, He's going to destroy it. I know that, okay? I'm not particularly crazy about our current president. But I know that God put him there, okay? Because I understand the Scriptures, and I understand how things work. Somehow He's using him to judge this nation. And I understand all that stuff. But what I'm trying to say to you is I really believe that by saying that, and that you're complaining about where God has you. Does that make sense to you? Oh, off to the way other end. Yeah. Yeah. Black is white and it's really not dark and it's... Yeah. Yeah. Sure can. You know, and I really want God to help us. Okay, I'll be right with you in just a second. Joyce. I'm coming this way. Let's get another word. Constructive complaining.
Well,
let's
okay. Constructive criticism, I guess. But what I'm trying to say is you can still disagree.
I know what you mean.
Right. Well,
that's your prerogative.
But the way Christians have been doing it so much in our society where we're not ministering well.
Right.
To the other people that are not Christians. They see us as murmurers and complainers.
Well, what we're really saying is God's not in charge. He's really, you know, I don't like this man. You know, this is where God has us right now. What we're really saying is I don't like it here. You know, and we're complaining about where He has us at. And so then we'll see that. And so what I encourage you to do is read these chapters. And start to say, go by verse, do what we do in this study. Let particular thoughts or whatever minister to you. That's what I do. I go through it, a particular thought or whatever will minister to me, and I'll start typing it out. And it starts developing and building and getting bigger. And God will do that for you too. All right, that's how I allow the Lord to speak to me. So just do that and let the revelation of Him come to you in your particular situation. You know, but you'll read through there, and I promise you, you'll find yourself, because these are our examples for us who's upon the end of the age, who the end of the age is upon. Okay. Be there standing listening to you, or would you want them saying about you?
I think from one of the principles I saw here was when he said that God couldn't deal with the murmur or couldn't stop it.
Moses.
Pretty much narrowed down to the individual.
Yeah.
And I think what happens with a constructive criticism is the action that you take to change whatever situation that you're in. If you sit around and complain and you never do something to change your position, example being, if your camp is far off and all you do is complain and you're consumed, then the natural way to, or the best way to deal with that then would be try to move in closer and get in with the things that are progressing or to change your position. So if you just sit around and complain, you're going to be consumed. If
right.
you do something to
make a positive
to the
effect. That's good, Terry, because one of the scriptures that we'll read next week is that every man complained at his tent. As Moses would walk through the camp, these guys would be standing in the tent of their door, and they'd be complaining at him. And you know, and it's driving him crazy. And they weren't doing anything about the situation. They wanted meat to eat. Well, go out there and kill a rabbit or something, you know. But you know, do something, but just don't stand here and yak about this thing. You know, butcher one of your bulls. You know, do something if you want to eat some meat, but goodness gracious alive, don't stand here complaining about the manna. So, yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. They had all these animals there, and they didn't want to eat them. You know, they just wanted to complain. That's good. That's good. Big guy. Read it. Right. They get in you. Yeah. It's a leprosy. That's it, man. I'm telling you, it affects you. It does. And everybody here knows it. Everybody here knows that's the truth. But let's try to somehow draw the good and the positive and a change in our bodies, in our mentalities. Not just, I guess, I got you, Judy. Not just in what we're teaching here, but let's draw something out of this thing that will wash our minds. Let us not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds. Let's get our minds renewed in this thing.